This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 277. Never tell the Lord of Purgatory that you're bored. Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to yet another episode of our wonderful weekly podcast. How you doing?
Hello.
Did you have a good week?
Yes.
Are you sure?
I'm tired.
Are you not lying to the people?
I'm tired.
Okay, well that's the truth. I can look at you and see that you're tired.
Yeah.
But we never tire of video games, gadgets, and, you know, all their awesome things like anime. So we have, I'm not gonna say very special episode.
No, because you always say that. But it's not special if you keep saying it's special.
But it's special if they only happen every once in a while.
But every week you say it's a very special episode.
No, it's like almost every other week.
It's a little too continuous.
I didn't say it was look.
If you just said this is an episode of Ash, by saying that it's not special, you kind of make it special. Kind of like those celebrities who don't want you kissing their ass because it's like kissing their ass.
I'm not following your logic at all.
That's alright, a lot of people don't.
Anyway, all I'm trying to say is that we are doing something out of the norm. It makes it not a normal episode. Where, you know, typically we talk about...
Then you could say it's not a normal episode, but it's not
but
special,
then it sounds
different.
But if you say that it's not normal, then you're like, so it's abnormal? Well, does that mean it has like a cyst or something? It sounds like it's disease.
It's got a tentacle growing out of the side.
It better not. It better
only
not.
Only one tentacle,
no,
not like
no.
eight.
It better not have any tentacles.
Like one.
No. Not even one. No.
One with a little suction cup.
No.
Maybe I'll be an octopus for Halloween next year. A sexy octopus.
Oh, God. No, a slutty octopus.
A sexy octopus. No. I'm just sexy. I'm not slutty. I'm not giving out hand jobs for free.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if you're going to go as any animal or anything like that, you're supposed to go as a slutty blah, 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 blah on Halloween.
No, I'm going to be a sexy octopus.
Can we get off the sexy octopus?
Yeah.
All right. Let's get back to what I was trying to say. Can't believe we went that far into a tangent before even actually getting to the topics of the show. Seriously.
It just keeps getting better.
Something like that. I don't know. But anyway, this unique episode of the podcast. How about
unique
that?
Just means special.
You know what? You get off my balls. All right? I'll say whatever I want to say. Thank you very much. I do whatever I want. I'm a grown-ass woman. On this special episode of our podcast, we are talking all anime. Mostly because, frankly, I really wasn't all that impressed with CES.
What?
Yeah. Like, there were a couple...
No, I was saying what because I was trying to make fun of the fact that CES was so unimpressionable that I was like, what are you talking about? Apparently, you didn't get the joke.
No, I didn't get the joke. I didn't get the memo about the joke. I didn't get an email about the
you
joke.
Didn't did you check your Twitter?
I did check.
I put the memo on the Twitter.
Oh, you put it on the Twitter?
Yeah.
See, I don't check Twitter on Sunday.
I was like, memo, a joke is coming up, and if I say what, that's the joke.
Oh, no, no, no. See, if you want to catch me on the weekend, you got to put it on Facebook. See, I tweet during the week, I Facebook on the weekend. See, that's what's up.
Whatever.
Anyway, moving on from the joke. No, but seriously, like, CES wasn't really all that impressive. Like, you know, there were the rumors about the next-gen consoles from Microsoft and Sony possibly being announced, especially since it was Microsoft's last year. Nope, didn't happen. And frankly, I'm not surprised because really an announcement like that should be made at an E3. So if it is going to happen, it will...
But you know, do you think we're now... Like, it's time for a new console? Like, actually think the Xbox still has a lot more life.
I do, too. I don't think that, really, it's time for a new console. Frankly, I don't feel like the PS3 has even been close to push to its limits yet, to be honest. And, you know, Sony has said for the last, you know, almost 2 years now that they have a 7-year plan for the PS3. Well, you know, we're not anywhere near that 7 years. I think, if anything, you know, possibly the pre-announcement with Nintendo, with the Wii U, might have gotten the
might have spurred them to go, you know what, maybe we should start thinking about this now.
Exactly. So we can start hyping it now, and maybe it's a two-year-out plan, but we start hyping it now, you know, so that Nintendo doesn't steal the buzz. Like, that's really the only thing I could think of as a vaporware thing. But anyway, outside of that, you know, Monster came out with some new Beats.
The VuseX guys got awards for their...
Yeah,
their glasses. Who called it?
That would be you.
Me!
You know, there was the announcement about Project Fiona from Razer, which I wrote about because I thought that was really interesting. And as I said, I'm not a PC gamer, but if I was, that's the kind of device that I would love to have my grubby little mitts on mobily. You know, to be able to play my PC titles mobile with accelerometer.
What PC titles do you got?
I'm saying, if I was a PC gamer, I would love to have a mobile device that wasn't a 17-inch laptop, or had to be a 17-inch laptop to have enough power to run the games that I would want to run. You know, thinking about traveling and things like that, I would love to have a device that I could literally take my PC title that I already owned, as opposed to having to buy another special version for a special mobile device. To be able to take my save game, take my game, load it onto a device that has the same input and the same, you know, build. I mean, they're putting freaking Core i7s in these things, so they're not going to be a slow machine. But to be able to, you know, take Skyrim, the PC version of Skyrim, with you mobily.
Yeah, no. Not a good idea.
Well, no, not for you, because you have an addictive type.
I am. I'm an addictive type Pokemon.
You are. You are an addictive type Pokemon. But, you know, I can see a market for that. For people. So that was really, like, the most interesting thing. You know, and the mock-ups that they have really look spectacular. Really, that was about all that really, like, crazy impressed me. I mean, there were some few gadgets here and there. Gola didn't, you know, as we talked about, didn't disappoint, because they had some really fantastic-looking new bags, and I will probably be getting some. I'm not even going to lie. But really, there was no, like, wow, you know, and just wasn't, so...
Right.
No. I figured I'd take my time and, you know, go back to focusing on something that had a little bit of wow! So,
and what had the wow?
Anime. So, a couple of things. First off the bat, and I wasn't aware that it actually launched, but Anime Network now has a iOS app companion. Companion to their web app, so you can actually purchase, very much like a Crunchyroll subscription, you can purchase an Anime Network subscription, and you can watch the content both on your computer as well as your iOS, and I believe the Android app is launching soon. I'd have to go back and double check, but I don't think it was live at the time that I looked at the iOS version. It was so new that they had a lot of bugs in it, but they actually fixed them pretty quick. They actually got a new release that addressed all the major bugs.
Wow.
Out within 3 days.
Whoa.
So that was really impressive, because it usually takes about a day for Apple to actually approve an update to an app and then push it out.
Wait, it takes them like 3 days to hit a green check mark?
Yeah, basically, yeah. But there were some major issues, like the audio would cut out, the video would actually just fade to black, you know, every 3 minutes, so you'd have to start the video over and then stream it in. And
lame.
It would fail sometimes to do the video out, period, so if you wanted to watch
fail
it on
video.
Bigger screen, it didn't work, but they addressed each and every one of those issues and got them all fixed. What I like about the Anime Network app, especially for mobile use, is that because Anime Network has, you know, one, a cable channel, and two, very, very strong relationships with the developer distribution houses, all of their videos that are available in the app, you can choose and set your preference whether or not you want to hear subbed or dubbed.
Get out!
No.
Really?
For every single episode, for every single series.
Wow.
So you actually have the choice. You can either set a major preference or at the time that you're watching the video.
Man, I feel like sub today.
Exactly. So if you want to, you know, watch an episode and say, okay, well, this is what it sounded like when it was first created, and then listen to the dubbed version and say, okay, well, how close were the voices? You can actually watch that same episode again for a couple minutes and watch the dubbed version and do the comparison. Right then and there, decide, I'm going to watch and deal with the subtitles, because that's so much better. And then continue to watch the whole series that way, or set your preference to which one you want to hear. Or, yeah. Which I thought was really cool. I like that flexibility. It's one thing that I wish Crunchyroll had. Hulu only on some titles actually offers.
I wish Funimation would do something like that too, because every once in a while you get one series that's completely dubbed, and then the next series is completely subbed. And I'm like, I wish I could just stick to one.
Yeah. Or, you know, one of my experiences, which was really funny, was I was watching a series on, I think, Hulu, and it was obvious that they got the videos from two different sources, because like three episodes in, everything was dubbed, and then the fourth episode was subbed.
Something must have happened with their other dub, and like, we need to find this episode fast. People are going to get through these three episodes like, bam!
Yeah, either that, or one was edited, and there was some content that they didn't want shown, and so they just went with the subbed version, because that content was already, like, not there, or the other way around.
Probably!
In the first three episodes of the subbed version, there were some things they didn't want, so the dubbed version had it taken out, and that's what they ran with, is what I'm guessing happened. But I do like the option to choose, which I thought was great. The interface needs a little bit of an update.
Like a facelift?
It does, because it's still a little clunky. You know, when you expect that you tap on an episode, when you're in the thumbnail view, you expect that it'll start the video. It doesn't. It just shows you the synopsis. Tapping the video frame at the top of the window also doesn't start the video, so you actually have to, on the thumbnail view, tap the play button that's in the little screen to start the video, because otherwise if you go into the next page, you can't start it. So that's a little counter intuitive.
Exactly. I was going to say that,
but again, it's now just a 1.1 release, so I'm sure that there are things that they'll probably change about it as well. But their entire catalog, as far as what they've made available in the U.S., is available. So, for instance, a couple of series that are just now on episodes 1 or 2 on Hulu Plus are actually available in their entirety 13-episode run.
Ooh.
Like Maria Hollick's...
I got through the first season of that, and I was like, let me jump into the second season.
Yeah, the whole second season is now actually available on Anime Network.
Oh.
And you can do it, again, subbed or dubbed. One of the series that I'm going to talk about today actually is available in its entirety on Anime Network, whereas it's only on episode 3 on Hulu Plus and doesn't even exist on Crunchyroll. So if you are a huge anime fan, it is a nice way to kind of round out your basically anime access, because as we know, Bandai is not going to be distributing anymore in the U.S. I imagine that Funimation is probably not going to license far too many more series. It's really kind of sad to say, but I believe that anime is on the downswing, and it's about to again become, you know, the nerdiest of us thing that we do, and bringing in imports and things like that. I'm hopeful that the subscription services will stay alive to allow us to get access to the content, regardless of it being distributed here or not. So, for instance, Crunchyroll's deal is that they actually stream simulcasts a day delayed. So a lot of the content that you have access to that is new on Crunchyroll is stuff that is actually currently being broadcast overseas, which I like, because it doesn't limit me from being able to see new content. I really want, you know, the Funimations of the world and Anime Networks of the world to keep that up, so I have access to new stuff, because I'm not about to, you know, raid Play Asia to get imports and buy an external DVD player to set to a different region so I can watch stuff. I'm not that into it. So if I can't get access to newer stuff, that'll pretty much be the end of my fandom, really. You know, so that's kind of sad. But one of the series that I actually picked up and watched, because it was on Anime Network, is the series I'm going to talk about. The final thing that I just have to say is I find that their subscription stuff is actually pretty reasonable. You can either do it month by month. They do have free stuff that's available, so it's, you know, a couple of episodes, and you got to wait a week to get the next couple of episodes if you do the free version, as opposed to if the entire series is available at that time, you can watch it if you subscribe. But you can do month to month, you can do 3-month block, or you can do a year block.
That sounds like the way Xbox does the gold membership.
Exactly. So it makes sense, because it's like, hey, if I'm into it, I might just be into it, you know, for the month, because there's a series I really, really want to watch right now, and you might have a couple others I wouldn't mind seeing this month, and that's it. Or if you're a diehard, the year subscription is $70. So it's 12 months access to everything that they have listed on there, which, you know, isn't bad if there's a lot of series that you haven't seen. So there are quite a few things that are on there. Basically, everything that's airing on Anime Network, as well as the new licensed content that they work out deals to air, that stuff's available as well. You also have the ability to check and see, one, if the channel is actually available on your system, and actually look at the schedule for your system as far as your cable provider, if you have it. So if you want to know if something's going to be on live, you can. And again, like Crunchyroll, no commercials, so it's just the full run of the content if you are a paid subscriber. So it's not a bad deal all the way around. I did it for a month to see a couple of different series that I wanted to catch from beginning to end. You know, I'd only kind of half seen The Lunar Legend of Tsukihime, so I wanted to finish it. I was able to do that. And the series that I'm going to talk about right now, which is called Majioki O Samurai Girls. Now, I have no idea what that is.
Let me guess. There are samurai girls in it?
There are girls. There are samurai. There are things. And
do they have big boobs?
Some.
Not all.
Some, not all. Not, okay. Not all. All
right.
So basically what you end up with in this series is, it's a harem, obviously.
Anime. Oh, really? Y'all really?
It's a harem series, and the main character is named Yamato, which it's always really funny for me when I watch a series and the lead character dude is named Yamato, because I always, you know, immediately think about Forever Yamato. Okay, we'll talk about that later, because I see that you just have the duh face.
Yep.
So, basically, Yamato and this girl named Momoko, who I'm just going to call Momo, have been friends ever since they were really, really little. Momoko Kawakami is the eldest daughter, and basically the heir to the Kawakami fighting style, which is this really renowned, amazing, kill 'em all dead fighting style that's revered in Japan, in all of Japan. And Yamato is basically, he's a nerd. He has no fighting ability. He is, you know, I don't want to say a homunculus of a kid because he doesn't look sickly, but he's just like an average looking dude. Small build, you know.
He's your everyday, normal guy.
Yeah, he is, okay.
Just a regular, everyday, normal guy.
But he is really, really in love with Momoko from when they were little. They were always together. And
did they pee together?
I'm sure they probably did. They don't show it in the series.
Of course not.
I'm sure
they would change the rating.
You know, I'm sure they bathed together or whatever. So, Yamato basically is always with Momoko, and so he's like, I always want to be with you. And she's, so she asks him when they're little if he will stay by her side forever, and he says, no, I don't want to be, you know, behind you in your shadow. I want to be equal to you, so I will become prime minister. I will become the greatest tactician in the world, and my brains will balance out your brawn, and we'll be an amazing team. And she said, oh, well, if that's the deal, then fine. If you become prime minister, we can be together. And so he spends all of his time, like, becoming basically brilliant is the goal. And so they go to I want to say Kawakami School, because it's named after them, where there are other great fighters from family houses. The top dogs within the school are known as the Big Four, and everyone reveres
the Big Four.
The Big Four, of which Momoko is one. Okay? But there are other girls that are involved that Yamato has come in contact with his life. And the first episode actually starts with this big Kawakami battle. And so basically, one of the classes, the senior class, had an issue with the junior class.
Of course it did.
And because the school is based around these fighting styles and these noble families,
they engage in Mortal Kombat?
They do. They basically engage in combat. Now, it's not like, you know, weapon, fight to the death, but it's basically class versus class. Almost kind of reminds me of, like, a, what the heck is that game that I loved to play? Dynasty Warriors. Okay, so it's all field tactician. There are
so they're all generals, like on a field,
major field, and there's a general that's organizing people to go from this end and that end and steal their flags and all that kind of stuff. And
okay,
people defending things. And Yamato is the general for the junior class, and it looks like they're losing, but he set up different things in different areas, some really interesting tactics. He's able to demoralize one entire class and get them to switch and actually start to fight on the side of the junior classes, because he takes their general, who's a girl who, like, flaunts the fact that she is so beautiful, and her beauty actually distracts people, which is why she's able to, you know, fight so well, and gets on a cell phone video of him smacking her butt, and it just demoralizes all of her guys, and so they switch and fight for the junior class. But then he puts it out and sends it to, like, everyone, so everyone on the field gets it on their phones, which is really funny. And so some hijinks ensue, and eventually this really gorgeous raven-haired brunette shows up. And you realize, oh crap, that's what Momoko has turned into, from this, like, little teeny guy girl. She's like a knockout. But she lives and loves to fight. Like, unless there's the ability for her to fight and really kind of let go, she's not interested in it at all.
Wow.
And so, like, Yamato is desperately trying to win the battle. He finally pulls it out and wins, and so it's the end of the thing, and the junior class is really happy, and so he's celebrating with some of his friends, and you get introduced to a couple of more girls. One of the girls, and I'm probably going to butcher her name, and, you know, I've done it before, but is named Yuki, and she is kind of like the bad definition of otaku. Okay?
Like, otaku is perceived as a negative connotation.
I try to focus on the positive side of it, but it really takes the negative connotation, like, all the way to the extreme. She is, like, crazy ass into porn. She is into collecting different dolls. Like, she writes fan fiction about Yamato screwing her at the school and has him proofread it. And so as he's reading it, you actually are seeing, you know, the actions going on, and she's getting all excited and gets nosebleeds because she just wants Yamato to basically bone her. And
basically?
But, yeah, basically.
Sounds like the combo Ultra Deluxe edition.
I mean, that she wants that. That's you know, not to be undone. And of course, she's got short purple hair, but she's an amazing archer. And that is her specialty. So you meet other girls that have other specialties. But you find the backstories are because Yamato has been very good to them in one way or another. You know, they were either very shy and no one liked them, and he helped bring them out of their shell, or he was just genuinely nice. Like, the purple-headed girl, Yuki, used to get picked on at school all the time because she looked different. And so Yamato, basically, you know, getting his behind beat, jumped into a fight and protected her and said, "Don't ever be ashamed to be who you are. You're a wonderful person and you're my friend." And so ever since then, she's like, "Ah! And then there's another girl who is from a great swordsmith line, but she's ridiculously shy, and so she talks through this little keychain. I want to say it looks like a piñata horse, but she talks through Maju-chan, which is what she calls it, all the time, because she's so shy. She doesn't actually, you know, try to talk to people, but she'll talk through this thing, which is really odd and funny. But you'll find that you know, Yamato met her when they were in school, did the same thing, and is slowly bringing her out of her shell and introducing her to other people, so she's not always home all the time in training, but she's an amazing fighter. And so as you go along in the series, some things happen that actually threaten Japan, and you start to actually learn a little bit about Yamato's backstory. So his father left and, you know, did one of those really, you know, over-the-top bombast statements of, "This is why I'm abandoning Japan. Please understand, I'm not abandoning you, but if things change, this is when I'll come back." But there are pieces that are missing in the dialogue. You know how they do sometimes to
Right, so then you recover it later on in the series, correct. And it makes more sense later.
Exactly. So there are those pieces, and then as you get further into the series, those pieces start coming out, and it's basically as if Yamato starts remembering what those things are. But these other girls all end up starting hanging around each other, and there's like six of them.
Girls who hang around with other girls. Yeah. And as a dude,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Girls who like the same dude, they don't become super, super best friends.
Right. And so, like, in the middle of the series, they are, because they're all kind of fighting and hiding the fact that they really like Yamato.
Yeah, but the minute that one girl's like, I'm going to say something, then they're all going to get on the defensive.
Exactly. And that's what happens for, like, three episodes. And so, at one point, you know, in the series, Yamato isn't always next to Momoko anymore, and she starts acting out, actually, which is really funny, because a lot of times, like, he'd be like, if I do this, I'm gonna get a kiss, and she's like, okay, but if you don't, then I get to punch you in the nuts, because you're my disciple, you know, and he doesn't do it, she's like, okay, well, you know, here you go, bam, you know, and it's a crippling punch, and that kind of stuff, but you get
to
the point. You
know, she keeps hitting his balls.
I know, she's not gonna be able to use him down the road. So you get to a point where, and it's really interesting, at least to me, where she starts doing some introspective stuff, because Yamato isn't around all the time. She goes to look for him because she expects him to be there, and he's not, and it's because he's helping this person, or he's helping that person, or he's just really by himself and trying to enjoy, you know, what's going on, and his actual dream of becoming prime minister, because there are some political things that are happening in the background as well. You get introduced to some characters that are actual anti-heroes, with a hint to why they're there, but not really, which forces the group to come together and fight, and it's during that fight that everyone basically outs themselves as being in love with Yamato. And this is after a couple of introspective episodes with Momoko, so she's pretty much realized that she doesn't want the deal anymore, she just wants him around. But it's too late, because by the time she's ready to actually say it, one of the other girls has already said it.
Okay.
Because they're pretty sure that they're going to die in this fight, because they're actually outmatched. Somebody else has taught the same style of fighting that Momoko's family is known for to basically a bunch of mercenaries for hire. And they've decided they want to destroy the fuck out of Japan. During the fight, Momoko goes a little crazy.
No, really?
She likes to fight.
Because so she really gets into it.
Exactly.
Like Ikitosin. This is so much fun!
Exactly. Yeah. And she's finally up against somebody that can actually, you know, hold their own and challenges her power. And so Yamato and a couple of the other girls try to get her to stop, but she doesn't. Yamato ends up getting hurt bad. Like, he ends up in the hospital. And Momoko is really upset. And all the girls are like, you know, saying how much they actually really and truly love him. And so they're all around his bed, and then they start shooting each other the dirty eye because they realize, oh shit, you love him. Yeah, well, I love him too. And so they start having like infights. Like, none of them will let any of the other ones be by themselves because they know they're going to be alone against him. Like, there's one episode where one of the chicks wants to go to the bathroom, and they're like, well, I'll go to the bathroom then. You know, because they don't want to run away. So there are funny moments in it. Some of the fighting sequences are actually pretty good. It's very interesting in that once you get past the slapstick stuff that's in there, it's actually a pretty interesting plot that's going on. It's, you know, obviously a harem. I'm pretty sure that it was a game at some point. It does have a manga component, but it's actually really enjoyable. It pokes enough fun at itself so that when it has the serious moments, they don't feel too, too serious, and they don't feel too, too out of place.
Right.
You know? So, I really enjoy it. Like I said, the whole thing is available on Anime Network on demand, or on the web component. I believe that up to 4 episodes are available on Hulu Plus, if you have that as an option. I would definitely, definitely recommend it. I enjoyed watching it. It was one of the series that I marathoned, and really was glad to. The final episode answer some questions but leave some more, so they left themselves a nice opening to
continue it
if they wanted to, but if they didn't, where they left it, it would be okay. And sometimes that doesn't happen in anime.
No.
Like, no, you can't do this anymore. Yeah. But you don't end up with that on that one. So I would highly recommend it. If you are the type that... if you enjoy Tenchi Muyo.
Which ones?
Before GXP.
Okay. Because GXP sucked balls.
Yeah. If you enjoyed Tenchi before GXP, you'll enjoy... Majioki Samurai Girls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's what it kind of reminded me of. The stuff going on with Ayaka and Ryoki and...
Ryoko. Yeah. And Wasumi.
Well, and eventually Ryoki, too, when she became
a when she was allowed to actually have a human form.
Exactly. And then she's like, ah, Teddy! You know.
Yeah.
And Tsunami Suzami.
Ryoki.
Washu. Yeah, exactly. It very much reminds me of that. You know, different houses, different personalities, all after the same dude.
Well, you can't have a harem of the same kind of girl.
Why not?
If they're all the exact same type of girl, then...
You can bone all of them.
It doesn't matter which one you choose, because they're all essentially the same.
Yeah, but they have different names.
Still creepy. You gotta have different types. In a harem, the point of having a harem is to have all different flavors and walks of life.
No, the point of having a harem is getting able to fuck more than one thing.
Yeah, and they all gotta be different.
They don't have to be different.
Yes, they do.
It's good.
Yes, they do. Love Hina, they were all different.
You're talking about anime. I'm just talking about harem in general.
Oh, yeah, I'm talking about anime harem.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about harem in general. The point of having a harem in general. Now, if you want to go and specify... You know,
it's a special club of ladies. Or gentlemen.
It's a special club of ladies.
But anyway, so is that all?
Yeah, that's what I got.
All right.
What about you? I know you've been doing some things in the world O's anime.
Yes, I have. And I'm going to actually talk about two different series and I'm not going to overly indulge on a lot of them because I actually think
I'm going to ask questions.
Okay.
Okay.
I might not answer all of them because I'm trying not to spoil them.
Yes.
But first and foremost, I watched an anime series on Hulu called Future Diary.
Ooh, Future Diary. I saw that. It looked kind of spooky, so I thought I might watch it.
If you liked Eden of the East.
Yes. Yes. Still waiting to get my hands on the second movie.
And even little hints of Higurashi no Nukuroni. And Death Note.
Wait, is that the one? The second one that you said, is that the one that you have problems with saying it in English?
When the cicadas cry.
All right.
It's sad when I can say the Japanese name
really bad.
Easier than the English translation.
Higurashi no Nikuruni.
But it has all those elements. So if you put all the really your interesting things about those series into one series, and they actually made it work. So what happens is, and like I said, I don't want to spoil a lot of it because. All 13 episodes are available on Hulu, so you can actually watch the first season. There is a second season, but that has not aired yet.
Okay.
The first season actually aired earlier in October of 2011.
Okay,
so it's still fairly recent, in terms of circulation. But you have your main character, and his name is Yuki Armano, and he is really introverted. Like, he doesn't really talk to people, he's always alone, but he's always observing the world, and he writes in his cell phone diary of the things that he observes.
Okay.
Like, he really doesn't talk to anybody, like, he's always, always updating in his diary, like, walked down the hallway, took 4 steps down the stairs, like, he's meticulous about the notes that he takes.
Okay.
He feels that he's an observer, and that he notices everything.
Okay.
But when he's home... because he doesn't really talk to anybody, he has these imaginary friends.
Okay.
Or so he thinks they're imaginary. And one is called Deus Machina, and one's called Moon. So the fact that this imaginary friend has a name like that, I would not be too concerned. I'd be a little concerned about if they're imaginary or not. But it's this giant, if you ever saw Kakurenbo?
Nope.
That's spooky. You would dig it. If you ever look it up, like, look up the animation for it, this Deus Machina character has that same kind of animation style from Kakarenbo. And he's pretty much the god of this purgatory, like, place. And Yuki goes there and talks to him. He's just like, I'm really bored with life, and, you know, I just observe, and there's just nothing going on. And Deus is like, I can change that. If you really want me to. So, of course, in his imagination, he's like, yeah, sure, hook me up. So, you know, he wakes
up. You should never tell the god of purgatory.
Well, he doesn't know. He's not aware at this point that Deus is real. He doesn't get it. He thinks he's just having these imaginary conversations with these entities in his mind.
Well, even in your imaginary conversations, if you're talking to something named Deus
Machina,
yeah, you should not tell Deus Machina
that you're bored and you want change, because, oh, he will give you change.
Bad things are just going to happen. And even if it wasn't real, there would just be bad things that happen in your imagination.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, he wakes up.
Yeah.
You know, and life has not changed anything. And he's just like, whatever, just hung out with my imaginary friend. Lives with his mom, who is a comic editor.
Okay.
So she's constantly working. She's hardly ever home. We don't see much of a father. I think he rolled out.
It happens a lot in the anime.
It happens a lot.
You know, I call it the Ash Ketchum syndrome.
Yeah, there ain't no daddy.
Ain't no daddy.
Ain't no daddy.
Ain't no daddy.
It's the reverse Disney.
It's...
Well, actually, no.
No.
Because in Disney, sometimes you don't have your father or your real mother.
Correct.
Sometimes there's just no parents.
Mm-hmm.
But the next day happens, and he's walking to school, and he's noticed that there's an entry in his diary that he did not make.
Mm-hmm.
So his phone now has the ability to tell him what will happen in his future. So, all of a sudden, he has all the answers to this pop quiz that happened in class. So, his grades start getting better. Everyone's like, whoa, what happened to him? Like, he's not necessarily going out and talking to everybody, but he's walking around like, yeah, I'm hot shit. And people don't understand why all of a sudden this introverted kid is now given the premise of, I am bigger and better than all of you, without even having to say it still yet.
Okay.
But he gets a note on his phone talking about being beat up on his normal path to school. So he decides not to take that path and obviously avoids
getting beat up, right?
But at the same time that this is going on, that he's starting to realize that he has this ability, or his phone has developed this ability, there's a string of murders happening in his city. And you find out that there this other murderer has a phone, too, that has an ability. So, what happens is Deus Machina summons the 12 of them, the 12 diary holders, to this realm. So now Yuki's like, fuck, this is real. And each one of the 12, each have a diary. They're not always phones, but they all are a journal or a diary of some sort. And they all have different properties from each other.
Okay, so it's not all of them that can just see in the future.
They all see in the future, but they all have some type of element to them that makes them unique. So, the murderer has the murder phone, which will tell him who he'll murder at what time and where, and, like, how. And apparently what happens, Yuki uses his phone to answer the pop quiz questions, and the murderer sees him using the phone. And the whole point of the 12 diary keepers is that they have to eliminate each other. And whoever lives through this game, their future, like, that will be the future of the world. Essentially. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So whoever survives,
if the murder person survives, there's just going to be a shit ton of serial murders?
And he'll never get caught. That's the thing.
Oh.
He'll never get caught. So you have him, and I'm not going to say who he is, but he somehow sees Yuki using his phone and realizes that he is a diary holder, and then his phone alerts him that he is going to murder Yuki. There's another chick in his classroom, her name is Yuno, and she has a phone. And she's kind of stalkerish-y to Yuki. Like, she follows him around. Like, always in the background, because he's not... Even though he's observing, he's only observing from one perspective. He's not internally analyzing everything. He's just like, saw a tree, it had this on it. He's only cataloging, more or less.
Right.
But her phone has a distinct ability to peer inside of his being. Like, it's a phone that doctors... all of his movements.
You mean documents.
Yeah. And even, like, if he's having a conversation with his mother, any internal thought or emotion, it picks up on that, too. So, literally, like, this phone is another extension of Yuki. It's creepy, especially because he's never really talked to Yuno. But she figures out that he is now aware that he has a diary holder phone. And she can tell when other diary holders are locking in and checking, because you could kind of like in Eden in the East, where all the you could see
all the what, silico.
You could see all so their transactions and stuff. You can see that with the diary entries for all the other diary holders.
Okay.
So going through that, when a diary holder has decided that they're about to eliminate one, it will trigger a dead end. So they have so long, I think it's like a period of 3 hours from the moment a dead end triggers on a phone, to either escape that fate and change it, or obviously fail and die, and that be the end of that.
Right.
Yuki, Yuno intervenes and saves Yuki from this dead end. And it doesn't usually happen. Like, usually when dead ends trigger, somebody dies. And the fact that he evaded it, after that first period of the game, you know, Deus sends them all back, and he's like, this is the first time in a long time anyone has changed their fate enough to no longer have a dead end. So now everyone's like, wow, he's truly the one. So now they're all like, fuck, we need to get him. Because only one of their diaries will be the true diary that will shape the rest of the world. But like I said, Yuno's phone can pretty much track anything that Yuki's doing. The murder phone, like I said, could pinpoint when murders were going to happen. There's a cop who, his phone is called the case phone. And his phone will help him solve cases, but only when a crime has happened. So if no crime has happened, he can't jump into anything because his diary is limited to cases in involving law. So, like, if he, unless, you know, he witnesses a murder or someone gives a testimony, his phone is useless. You meet another lady who has the escape diary. She's an escaped convict, so the case guy is always chasing after her. But her phone always finds her a means to escape any situation she's in. So she could be surrounded by SWAT, and it will guide her through the only exit that will
work and get
will
her
work
out of
for
it.
Her. You find out that there's another carrier who is a little boy, like young, like really young, and he has a picture diary. So his diary only updates 3 times a day. At morning, at lunch, and at night. So his is essentially useless unless, you know, whatever he sees in the morning, any mentally keeps track of what's going to happen before noon or what's going to happen between noon and thing, because it won't constantly update. It only updates those 3 times. So a lot of shit can happen
right
in between those set times that it will log. Though this kid is smart because he ends up infiltrating Yuki's house because Yuki and Yuno killed his parents. Yeah, it's a long story. But they somehow kill his parents, and he wants to get back at Yuki by killing him and Yuno. And when they find out that he's a diary keeper, to keep it away from them, because either you kill the person or you damage their diary. And that either one of those will trigger a dead end and instantly remove them from the game and essentially kill them. And to keep his diary away from them, he puts it in the mail. And mails it back to himself later on. So, like, they're searching the house for it because he's living with them. But they couldn't find it. And I thought the kid was smart with that. And then you meet a priestess, or, you know, a shrine maiden, who her diary tells the infinite truth.
Okay.
Like, no matter, like, it just, things that are unavoidable. It will just, all of that. And throughout this whole thing, Yuki is trying to figure out exactly what his diary does, because outside of observing the surrounding and stuff like that, it doesn't do anything intuitive. It's all subjective, I mean, objective, right in your face, plain as day. So he has, like, nothing particularly special
There's
about
no
his...
There's thread between what it shows him.
Right. So, I mean, it doesn't have, like, a particular theme. So the whole time he's like, I understand that my diary tells me everything, but what makes this special enough that everybody else needs to get me out of the... Because they're all gunning for him. But you find out that his diary, because it is so observant and whatnot, like, it's the most powerful diary. Because you could tell him something, and it will document in his diary, but if somehow you change his mind,
or you change his line of thought, it will change without alerting him that an addition or amendment has been changed. So his future, he can control any situation by observing it. So you meet a kid who is kind of like a detective.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thinks he's a diary owner. He's not. He's just amazingly perceptive.
Okay.
And
is that mini Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah, more or less. And he's facing off against another diary holder who is the breeder diary, and she can control dogs, which is awkward.
Okay.
Or her father can, actually. He tried to pass over his right to the phone to her, but Deus wouldn't let him. But he set up these fake dogs to have her, you know, be able to control them in his...
Fake dogs?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, because the real one can control real dogs, right. But anyway...
But she doesn't have control over it, because Deus wouldn't let it, so...
Right, but she has fake dogs.
She has fake dogs.
And she's acting like her father.
Okay.
In his stead, because he's being tracked by this Sherlock Holmes kid, and thinks he's out to kill him.
Okay.
But not. But this kid is relying on probability.
Okay.
So they're playing a toss game, heads or tails game.
Mm-hmm.
And... he had Yuki next to him because he was trying to figure out what Yuki's ability was.
Right.
So, you know, because Yuki is so observant, if he was watching the coin, he would know what the outcome was before it was revealed.
Okay.
So, they're playing this game back and forth, and because Yuki's able to see the coin and he's so observant, he knows what the outcome is, so his phone would update.
Okay.
So, the smart kid makes it so that Yuki can't see it. And his phone, at that point, doesn't update because he doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where his limitation is. It's only things that he is aware of and knows of.
Right.
But, I mean, things get really serious. Like, we haven't even seen all 12 of them yet.
All 12 of the holders.
And we'll see the other sets in the second season. But, you know... Even though she is she's madly in love with Yuki. And like I said, she's maybe only talking...
Well, she saved him, so that kind of told me right
there. Well, she kissed him and then was like, don't go to the 13th floor of this building. Go to any floor other than the 13th floor or you will die. And she ended up bringing him to the 14th floor. And they actually, they avoided the dead end. And... But we don't understand what Yuki's... I mean, Yuno's reasoning. Because... She's only talked to him once, as far as we are aware.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'll spoil it, whatever.
Yeah, spoil it.
So, at the end of this game, whoever wins the game, they become the new lord of the purgatory and the...
They become the new Machina?
Yeah, they become the new Deus Machina.
Okay.
And what happened was, in a parallel universe, Yuki and Yuno... were both put in the game, and they fell in love during the game, and it got down to the both of them.
Uh-huh.
And they had promised that they were going to mass suicide. They were going to suicide together and end the game, because they didn't want one to live and the other one to die.
Right.
Yuno didn't really finish...
Hers?
Yeah.
So Yuki died.
But she decided that once she became the new Deus Machina, that she would revive him. Because you do have the power to do that,
right?
And she becomes the new Deus Machina and revives Yuki, but she can't restore souls.
Oh.
So she gets pissed. Like, she is pissed. And what she decides to do is take the minion that she gets, because as the Murmur is the minion to Deus Machina. And she convinces Murmur... to bring her to a different reality where both Yuki and Yuno exist. And one that has the game intact.
Mm-hmm.
And reenacts the game. But she kills the Yuno of that universe and is now living as that one.
Oh.
Yeah. And she has her Murmur hang out with the Deus Machina of this world... So, you know, to keep an eye on him, more or less.
Okay.
So you've got two Deus Machina, kind of, though they haven't really revealed that, but that's why Yuno is so protective of Yuki this time around. because she fucked up last time, and she's going to make sure she doesn't fuck up this time. But she gets kind of crazy, because there are several times where, like, she doesn't want any girls near him.
Right.
At all. The priestess lady that I talked about earlier, who seems really nice, but she's kind of fucked up, too. Oliver
fucked up priestess. That's not a good place to be.
Well, because to get welcomed into their shrine, you have to fuck her.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Yeah. Watch it.
wait. She's a shrine maiden.
Well, see, when the shrine first was built, it was by her parents and her. And she was revered as a maiden. She was pure. And everything was great.
Uh-huh.
Until the parents died.
Uh-huh.
And of course, even though they died blood-wise for the shrine maiden then became the top. Yeah, a couple of the dudes were like, we're gonna fuck you now. Yeah. And
I'm giving you the dirty look.
Through the power of her vagina.
I'm sorry. No. No.
Yeah, through the power of her vagina, she now can control her constituents. Like, she can order them to do whatever, because they have all committed the really dirty sin of putting their dicks and or their vagina parts together. It they explain it better in the series. But
no, there's no better explanation. You can't fuck the shrine maiden.
Well, they did, and she's really psychotic about it, actually.
No shit!
Yeah.
But, my parents died, so I had to get fucked.
Yeah, no, they were just like, hey, you don't have anybody protecting your virginity anymore. Tap, tap, tap. Now it's gone. But regardless, I'm talking about, I'm not talking about the shrine.
I know what you're talking about.
But anyway, like I said, because Yuno's phone can literally monitor everything about Yuki, anytime it looks like there's a possible interest other than her, she gets fucky. And the shrine maiden pretty much was, like, hitting on him. And, you know, he's a young boy. Girls. He doesn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And all the constituents are now all, they're all, ganging up on her. And they're gonna murder her. So her dead end triggers. And Yuno's like, you can either choose me and I'll protect you. Or you can choose her and die here and I will do nothing. And literally, Yuki's like, what the fuck? You know, because he doesn't realize that the shrine means, you know, defiled and a dirty skank hoe.
Right.
So he doesn't know that she's about to double cross him. But he's like, I want to help everybody. Because, you know, he's young. He don't get it. But she always flips like that. And he's like, I don't understand. He's like, I don't understand why she's so into me. I've barely talked to her. But he hasn't realized that this is not the Yuno that he knows.
this is not the Yuno you know.
You know? But seriously. But I mean, it's really intuitive in terms of, I mean, it has a lot of elements from, like I said, Eden of the East with the phone incorporation. I mean,
and
the parallel universes from, you know, the whole When They Cry series and the death of Death Note. And I mean, I thought it was, you know, it came together really well. And I'm looking forward to the second season. And also on top of that, the other series I kind of want to briefly mention is actually a When They Cry.
Of course. Higurashi
no Nakoro ni. But that's Higurashi. I am talking about Umi Neko. Na Nakoro ni.
Umi Neko. Na
Nakoro ni. So first we had When the Cicadas Cry.
Yep.
Now we got When the Seagulls Cry.
I want to know when the doves cry.
Well, believe it or not, on on Destructoid, there was news last week that the creator of the Higurashi series is now making another series after Umi Neko. So I'm like, what will cry next?
Doves.
It'd be funny. But But Umi Neko Nakoro ni happens 2 years after Higurashi.
Okay.
It happens on this island called Ryojima.
Okay.
And this rich family has an estate on this island. Now, the island is huge. Like, it could have several mansions on it, but we're only shown one mansion, and the Urashima family is a highly recognized, highly wealthy family. And pretty much, grandfather is about to die, and he has not named a successor to him yet.
Okay.
So every year, since they've heard that he was slowly dying, the family has convened on the island once a year you know, to check on Grandpa, see what's going on. Maybe he's made a decision. Maybe he hasn't. And when they all arrive on this island, a lot of shit happens. Lots of shit. So, I mean, you have your main character, and his name's Battler. And he is the oldest son of the third child, because you've got the grandfather, and he had four kids.
Okay.
And each one of those kids married and had one kid.
Okay.
So you've essentially got, and with the maids and stuff on the island, you've got 18 people on Rio Jima at the time of the incident.
Okay.
And grandfather doesn't really want to give his inheritance to anyone.
Okay.
He doesn't think anybody is fit to carry on his name and carry on his wealth.
Okay.
And he designs this riddle in this game. On this island, there is a folklore that there's a witch that hides in the woods. And Kinzo, the grandfather, had contracted a deal with her in which she gave him about 10 tons of gold.
Okay.
And it's on the island somewhere. Not that you know where, but it's apparently on the island. And he can only keep that gold as long as he kept her employed, like, as long as their contract stayed intact.
Right.
The night that the family all comes, he decides that he's going to negate his contract with the witch. And I'm using air quotes here.
Right.
So she decides that she is now going to take back what she gave Kinzo to start his wealth and whatnot, and now wants interest on the loan that she gave him. And the loan isn't necessarily gold. It's pretty much everything that the Urashima family has built since that loan.
Okay.
So all of his children, all of their successes, their grandkids, and whatever success they were going to have now become kind of our
property.
Mm-hmm. But at this point, Beatrice the witch does not have a tangible form.
Okay.
And to revive, she has to do this. There's this ancient rite that has to happen. And you have to have so many people sacrificed for it.
Okay.
So finally, this is the year that more people came for the family conference. So Kinzo is like, I can revive her. And he's in love with Beatrice.
Okay.
And he wants her back in tangible form and wants his love back. And he decides that on this night, he was going to react the ritual, get her back, and fuck his family. Because literally, he has to kill, like, 11 people to resurrect her. And he has this giant riddle that's next to her portrait. And actually, believe it or not, the epigraph is solvable. Like, you can actually, if you're really smart and you know Japanese, you could, it's something that can be solved and will bring you to an actual location somewhere in Japan-ish area.
Okay.
And, so what really happens in the series is Battler, who really doesn't believe in the concept of magic, does not believe that Beatrice as the witch exists.
Okay.
He believes that Beatrice was a woman that his granddaddy loved very much, mm-hmm. but obviously couldn't get with her because, you know, being from a high family, he had to marry a high family, blah, blah,
right,
blah, blah.
Right.
So he believes that the murders and stuff that take place, and oh, trust me, murders happen on this side. This is Murder Island. People just be dropping dead.
This is Drop Dead Island.
Drop Dead Island, where you literally drop dead. but he believes that it's not an element of magic that is killing people, but that they're, you know, somebody on the island
is actually killing them.
And pretty much throughout the first occurrence, at the end of it, you know, the kids make it to the end, but all the parents and most of the servants are pretty much butchered. And Battler's like, there's no way for me to prove that this was done
by a person.
And we actually meet Beatrice at that point, and she's like, this time it wasn't. She's like, you can't explain any of it. I'm like, so this was magic, but I like you. I like people who don't believe that magic can exist. So I'm going to reset reality, and we're going to play this again, and I want you to tell me, like, they're pretty much playing like a chessboard with people, and he has to discern if the situations that are put in front of him are something that can be human-created, or if there's some unexplained, mysterious element that we'll call magic, is the culprit.
Okay.
So you find out that there are several witches, which is weird, because if they have characters who are witches, doesn't that already kind of give you the premise that magic does exist?
Yep.
But whatever, I'm suspending relief for that.
Suspend it on, you know, wires.
But, but anyway, Beatrice is an endless witch, which is why she could recreate reality and replay through it countlessly.
Okay.
That's all she does. That is her ability. And the minute she stops doing that, she pretty much no longer exists.
Okay.
She has to continue to do that to keep her endless title. You meet several other witches that that have... Like, they don't have mystical powers the way that you would think. Like, they're all logical things.
Okay.
Like, you meet another witch, Lady Byrne, and she is the Witch of Miracles. So if something has the probability of even, like, 0.000001...
Right.
As long as it's not a concrete zero, she can create a miracle out of nowhere.
Okay.
Then you have...
that's kind of mystical.
Yeah. But, I mean, they make it logical, even though, you know, that's a very slim chance of it happening.
Right, but it's not a superpower type.
Right. There are rules within their... All of their powers, they all have a certain restriction.
I can respect that. As opposed to, I can just conjure shit.
Right.
If I throw a toad in a pot.
Exactly. And none of that happens. It's all pretty much logistic things, but they're so far out that we would never perceive them as being successful.
Mm-hmm.
You meet another witch, Lambda Delta, who she can kill anyone without fail. Which is where the elements of, like, some of the people who've been murdered are in locked rooms from the inside. The doors, the windows are locked from the inside. So there was no... It looks like there's no way someone could have... From the outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... But she can kill anyone without fail. But if... I mean, I've been theorizing all of this. But if the likelihood that somebody would not die... And it wasn't an absolute zero, that's where Byrne could come in and create a miracle out of nowhere.
Okay.
So certain
the two
witches
of them
can
countermeasure each other.
They do. And Lambda Delta is actually in love with Byrne. And they don't fully mention it, but Byrne and Lambda Delta had competed in a game 2 years ago from Umineko.
Mm-hmm.
And there are characters in Higurashi that look amazingly similar to these two witches. So I believe that they actually were the creators of the Higurashi world and that game. And they were pitting against each other there.
Okay.
But they've come to this one because, you know, Beatrice, you know, is bored. And she's trying to keep herself from not existing anymore. So she's trying to come up with things that will keep her interested enough.
Uh-huh.
Because, like I said, the minute she is bored with it and does not continue, she ceases to exist. But it's really thought-provoking, and there are so many elements on top of what I've even just talked about that makes this really interesting. There is a visual novel that I'm playing right now.
Okay.
Where you really have to be paying attention to everything that's going on, because you are essentially Battler, so you have to think your way out of the situation. And they don't give you the answers in the series. Like, they touch about a lot of the answers, but they don't give them to you in the series. And I watched the series first. So I'm sitting there, and I mean, I have a notebook that I'm literally writing down everything.
It looks like you're writing a book.
Because there's just so much going on, and I don't want to miss a single thing, because it will be that thing that I miss is the thing that I need. But in the game, when you are logically battling Beatrice's, you know, presumed universe, there are certain elements you want to be looking out for. And they play them up in the anime series, too. When you are combating with her, if she says anything in red, that's an unavoidable truth. Like, that is completely solid. It's 100%. There's no, oh, this person died in the room. No one had a key to that room. If she's like, no one had access to that room, no one had access to the room. Like, there's no, oh, but someone had a key. Like, it can't, it's unavoidable. It's inescapable. It is a concrete, evident truth.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, when you play in the second episode, you start getting the ability to use Blue Truth, which when you're using it, when you're fighting with Beatrice, you can develop theory that are all based with truth.
Okay.
And the point of Blue Truth is to establish a plausible theory that whichever witch you're fighting with can only retort back with a red truth. So you're trying to get more information out
okay.
from the witch by using blue truth.
Okay.
And it's just, it's really, it really tests, one, your ability to listen to everything being said, be observant of everybody's backstory, because everybody plays a pivotal role
mm-hmm.
in what happens during 1986 on Ryajima. Later on, because I'm only playing the question arcs right now, which are the chapters, episodes 1 through 4, there are core arcs, which are episodes 5 through 8, which actually span into the year 1998. Yeah, it gets trippy. Because, mind you, everybody in 1986 died. You think.
You know, I'm telling you, this sounds like work.
It's so much fun, though.
It sounds like work.
It's
blow stuff up and
stuff. It's so much fun. It's a nice cleanser
mm-hmm.
from console games, because, I mean, it's really based on...
It's a lot of story wash and really choose your own adventure, because you are having to find the ways to use blue truth to get to the red truth to figure out
if it could have been done this way or that way.
Correct.
And have the proof to prove that you're right over Beatrice. But I mean, it's just really interesting because, I mean, in the series, they make Beatrice seem like she's one person.
Right.
But from what we know of her, you know, she was the love interest of Kinzo during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now Kinzo's an old man, and Beatrice still looks like she did back in...
Right.
You know, and there's so many theories as to, well, how could she remain looking that way and it not be magic-related? You know, so, I mean, I have a theory, and I'll talk about this theory, and then I'm going to end my spiel. But my theory about it is that... Kinzo met the original Beatrice during World War II. They had an affair because he couldn't marry her because he was already betrothed to this other bitch from this other mm-hmm. high family. He didn't want to marry her, but he had to. But on this island that he procured after World War II with all of his connections, he built a separate mansion on the island, on the other side of the island. So it has no connection to Ryajima on the other side. That's where he had his affair with Beatrice One. They had a kid. Beatrice One dies. And out of his insanity of losing his one true love and having to raise a family that he really didn't want to have in the first place, he acquired help to raise said daughter, and through his insanity believes that his daughter wasn't his daughter, but a reincarnation of Beatrice. Waited for her to be old enough. Fucked her. Had another kid. Yeah, I think there's an incest plot, and I actually think, I'm hoping it gets revealed in this game.
Aww, you had me all the way up to the incest.
It's a plausible theory. Outside of non-magic, how would it be possible?
It's not possible, it's magic, it's the same witch. Let's go with that. I like it's the same witch and it's magic.
Game over. If you're not willing to... disband your belief and try to break down what
if the suspension of my belief has to go into incest, I'm okay with not suspending
my belief.
It's just
a theory of mine. I'm not sure.
I don't like it when daddies fuck their daughters.
Well, yeah, neither do I.
Okay, I can only kind of stomach it when it's brothers and sisters and cousins. But no.
They might be cousins. Anyway.
Ew.
They might be twins. You should watch that one. But anyway, but I'm just saying, I like the idea that they want me to challenge my thinking. Like, they've given me a world, and they've given me my parameters of what...
It's pushing your critical thinking.
It definitely does, and I like it. I feel like my critical mind is, like, sharper than a butter knife now.
Oh, your critical mind was always sharper than a butter knife.
Maybe it was, like, a cheese dagger.
Yeah, cheese dagger.
Yeah, I do.
There you go.
So, if you want something that's going to challenge your mind...
Now, you said that you were playing a game. Is the game in English? Because, you know, typically light novels, when they're converted, they're not.
So there is no released English version of Umineko no Koroni.
Uh-huh.
However, there were so many people who liked Higurashi that there was a bunch of devoted fans who all learned Japanese and created a patch that puts the game in English.
Oh, so there's a fan-created patch.
There's a fan-created patch.
Well, that's not as bad as, you know, outright bootlegging it.
No. Nope.
Patch is a patch.
It's a patch. They created the patch. They actually even talked to the creator of Higurashi, and he's like, you guys loved it so much over there that you tirelessly learned, one, how to, like, code and program and do it, create a patch, and do it in English so that people over in America and English speakers could play my games. And because of their devotion to this, he actually created a character that you'll find out later in episodes 5 through 8 called a witch hunter, because they go under the witch hunt project.
Mm-hmm.
So he created a character in memory of all of their work to bring his game to America. So he immortalized them in his game and in his anime. So
that's cool.
That is super cool. Granted, the guy's crazy and kind of fucky.
You think?
But still, he paid homage to that.
That's
work.
Cool. I'm saying that's cool.
It's great.
I'm just saying.
So
it's kind of fucking.
So if you want something that's gonna definitely put some weird thoughts in your head,
it's definitely different.
Yeah. And then I would suggest you can even go to thewitchhunt.com. They actually have the first chapter as a demo, so you can actually see what I'm talking about there, and it's for free. You don't have to pay. But if you decide that you want to play the full game to get the full patch, you actually do have to buy the Japanese game and then attach the patch to it. But the Japanese game is only like $12.
Okay.
So it's really not expensive. And then the patch is free on top of that. I would suggest checking it out. If you don't want to do that, definitely watch The Future Diary. It is so worth it.
Yeah, it sounds good. I want to watch that actually.
Yeah, it's worth it.
All right, cool. All right, so that's what we have on the very special, unique, sorry, the very unique,
the abnormal episode of The Electric Sisterhood.
You can check out some of our notes. I'll make sure that Panda includes the link to
the witch hunt,
so that you can actually demo the game if you want. And as well as include some links to Majioki O, Samurai Girls, and Future Diaries. I think you should check out both. I think they balance each other out pretty well. One's kind of on the silly, introspective side, and the other one is on the not-so-silly, introspective side. So, with that said, you can get those notes on the podcast entry at our website, www.electricsisterhood.com, or you can use our short address, which is
esh.co, that is esh.co, the short address will bunch in a long one. You can check out any articles that have been written within the week. Any questions and comments should go to mailbag@landofesh.com. We are also available on iTunes, so go there, plug us in, and check us out.
That's right, you can go to the iTunes Music Store or visit the Zoom Marketplace and search for our podcast, Electric Sisterhood. Click on the beautiful subscribe button that appears, and that way you can ensure that you get the brand new episodes of our podcast the moment that we put them out upon the interwebs. But if you're not the type to use the iTunes Music Store or Zoom Marketplace,
then you can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine. But remember, if you're looking for us, you should look for the other shows that fly underneath our banner.
That's right, because we're not the only thing that makes up the Land of Esh. While all new episodes go out typically on Mondays, fresh and hot and poppin', you can follow it up with the reverse end of the spectrum, if you will, of thoughts by checking out the Boston Bastard Brigade podcast on Tuesday. And that will feed your sports nerd need, as well as games and whatnot, from a dude perspective. You can follow those guys up on Wednesday with an episode of the Geek Aggro podcast, which gets your gadget nerd needs fed. And for the rest of the week, there's all the stuff that we write on our respective websites, conveniently located and found at landofesh.com. You can also check out the latest issue of our magazine there and have some print goodness to take with you when you travel. There's all the stuff that we write about on the Twitters, and if you want to follow everybody on Twitter, you just need to visit my page, twitter.com/ninjasista, and follow the Land of Esh list. Or if you want to interact, ask questions, make suggestions on stuff for us to check out and report back to you on, you can hit us up on our Facebook page at facebook.com/landofesh. Yeah, we're all over the place, doing it up big time, people. So, with that, what shit you digging this week, Panda?
I am digging Mom's Minute.
Oh, damn.
I am. So, if you're not in the know, have you ever desired to have a gaming conversation with your mom, but your mom's like, hell no, then you need to check out Mom's Minute, where an actual mom has decided that she's going to learn about gaming stuff so that she can talk to us. Anybody. And it's not just gaming information or advice. She'll give you advice about anything.
I love Mrs. H, but I'm upset that we didn't get Esh Mom and shows done.
You know, but from
we tried for 2 years.
From the test show that Miss H gave the other day, I don't know if Esh Mom could compete. She's like radio gold.
Dude, you give Esh Mom a shot and a cigarette.
But I don't think Miss H has to use podcasting performance drugs.
Esh Mom needs podcast enhancing drugs. In some
places. But anyway.
Yeah, I said that.
But anyway.
But congrats to Mrs. H.
Congratulations. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say, and I'm probably going to call. But if you don't know, you can check her show live on Tuesdays at allgames.com. What are you digging?
This particular week, I am actually digging custom Converse Chucks.
Do you have them?
I'm about to order another pair.
You don't need another pair of shoes. You only have 2 feet.
I know, but I
need And you just them. Bought 2 pairs of slippers, yo.
I know, they're adorable Hello Kitty.
You don't need 2 pairs of Hello Kitty slippers. You only need one.
No, you need 2.
No, you don't.
Yeah, you do.
Why?
Because sometimes you might not feel like dark pink. Sometimes you might feel like light pink. I shouldn't have to. Anyway, I just love that Converse keeps refreshing the products that you can actually customize. Now, pretty much every single shoe that they make, you can actually custom, and it's really simple to do. And it only takes about 3 weeks now for them to actually ship from the time that you place the order to actually get them to your door. So that's like pretty cool to get them direct. Shipped. So, really easy to use. Awesome possum. Love them. Converse.com. So, with that, I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
We are out till next week.
Bye.